And we are here in our studio now with two of my favorite people who know music, who know politics, who know radical change. Fanon Hill, cultural organizer, co-founder, and executive director of the Youth Resiliency Institute, trainer in the National Rites of Passage Institute, writer and director of Lum Nava Love, and Navasha Dea, singer-songwriter whose voice is featured and is, of course, is the Lum Nava Love soundtrack, and co-founder and director of Healing and Performing Arts at Youth Resiliency Institute, here to celebrate with us Bob Marley's birthday and all it means for everything. Navasha and Fanon, welcome. Good to have you all in the studio.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you. Always good being here.
So I had to open with that. I know it. We were here to talk about Bob Marley, but it is, you know, when I saw what happened to her on that Senate floor, it just, you know, being told not to say when Coretta Scott King's comments about Jeff Sessions and Edward Kennedy's, Ted Kennedy's comments, calling him out as a racist, why he couldn't become a federal judge, and she was rebuked.
You know, Bob Marley would probably say Babylon System. And I think about his song Babylon System, written, you know, released in 1979. Babylon System was on his Survival album. And lyrically, me say the Babylon System is the vampire, failing empire, sucking the blood of the sufferers. Yeah. Tell the children the truth. Tell the children the truth. Rebuild, 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 rebuild. And so even back then, he knew that this Babylon system was going to be with us and we were going to have to rebuild and be willing to fight courageously in every dispensation. So his essence is still with us as this madness continues.
That is one of the 72 reasons to celebrate his 72nd birthday.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right?
For sure. For sure.
So, folks, the lines are open. We'd like you to join us at 410-319-8888. Your comments and thoughts on Bob Marley, his power in this world, on Babylon itself and where we are in this world at the moment. We want to hear your ideas at 410-319-8888. You can tweet us at Mark Steiner. Send an email to us at talk@steinershow.org. We want to hear your thoughts. Log on to our Facebook pages. I'll see whatever you want to say to us. Please do it on Facebook or call us at 410-319-8888. And we'll just go head on with some of the music as we want to play it as we go on. So I bet you as you guys were growing up with in your parents' homes, knowing the families you came from in East Cleveland, that Bob Marley was probably part of your growing up.
Oh, my God. I mean, we played him. Definitely. It's interesting because I get sentimental because they played Bob Marley when we cleaned up. And actually, to this day, I clean up better with Bob Marley. Hint, hint.
Right.
Might want to put that on.
And to clean up with
him. Yes. Yeah,
you don't get plenty of it, my love.
And just the consciousness he invoked in people regards to the lyrics. I grew up on Get Up Stand Up. I actually grew up singing his songs in my dad's reggae band from age 13 on to like 18. So I'm like, you know, honorary I3 with my sister and just, you know, war and just listening to those words and just, you know, having that consciousness when I went to school and went to high school. I definitely was very aware of his music and aware of the political stance he took and just aware that as an artist, it's our responsibility to tell the truth and to share lyrics and songs that can uplift people and remind people of who they are. So he definitely did that. Great lyrics, great songs. To this day is quoted. To this day, everyone loves Bob Marley all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And his music brings people together, no matter what race, no matter what culture, because everyone loves his music. There's certain people, certain genres that do that, and he did that or does that.
Yeah, absolutely does that. I mean, it's universal. You grew up with him as well, I would imagine, in your house.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, it's so funny you two grew up East Cleveland and didn't meet each other until later, after you got here, which I think is great. Yeah, but anyway. Yeah,
that's how life works sometimes, bro. Baltimore brought us together. But, you know, interestingly, I was introduced to Bob Marley through the Wailers. And Bob Marley, you know, before he was a solo artist, he was a member of the Wailers. So, you know, I'll break it down like this. Imagine Paul Coates and Eddie Conway being in a singing group and playing instruments and their lyrics addressing the issues that the Black Panthers were fighting against back then. You know, that doesn't even begin
That's
to speak to who the Wailers were. And musically, being from the Midwest, you know, Navasha, she knows it. I'm a huge Curtis Mayfield fan.
Oh yeah,
no, I play him all the time. The impressions, those harmonies are just so sacred. And so the Wailers actually loved the impressions. You know, a lot of the songs that they rehearsed, a lot of the songs that they played were songs by Curtis Mayfield. And so when I first heard the Wailers, it was very familiar to me. It was very soulful. And so, you know, the idea that you had Peter Tosh and Bunny Wailer, brilliant songwriters, artivists in their own rights, with Bob Marley together, composing songs such as Get Up, Stand Up, Hallelujah Time, that still speak to us to this day. So that was my introduction to Bob Marley. And then, you know, as those artists became solo artists in their own right, it was as if, you know, we were in a candy store, a Liberation candy store, and there were all these messages that were just coming from every direction, and they were traveling the world. But they never lost touch with the sufferers.
Never.
Yes.
Never. Never. I mean, and when in the early 70s, I remember we were organizing here in Baltimore in a mostly poor white community, started a food co-op. We would be playing that music. The whole community loved it. My first wife, daughter, mother of my first daughter, Chelsea, Saida, now Strongheart.
Yeah, Strongheart.
She went and moved to Jamaica, and Jamaica became part of extended family because of her living there, now married to Janelle, this wonderful Rastafari man who and their daughter, Alana. So that was always part of our world, all of it, in a really intense way. The revolution, the music, the marrying of these Afro-diaspora cultures with the cultures of all the kind of white resistance that happened in America as well, native. It all fit together. There's no mistake why Bob Marley and Tupac Shakur, you know, all over through Indian country, in many Indian in trailers, you see both their pictures hanging up.
That's right. Right? That's right. That's right. That's right. That speaks to it.
Right?
Yeah. He was about liberation music. And you were saying, Fanon, you know, never losing touch to the community is one of the secrets of being able to write liberation music, because you can't write about what you don't know about and what you haven't experienced personally, but also are not staying connected to. So I really, really do admire and emulate those artists who always stay in touch with the communities that are disinvested and disenfranchised and neglected, specifically impoverished communities that are invisible from around the world, because internationally America is looked at as this really vibrant, lush, you know, really rich country. And in my experience doing international work, specifically women's rights and racial inequity, we are invisible still, specifically Black Americans or descendants of Africans enslaved in the U.S. We're invisible in regards to the world and understanding what we've gone through, how we built this country. And it's, you know, the examples we have are Peter Tosh and Bob Marley, who were born in the tenement yards, born in the public housing of Jamaica. And that's another aspect of them being from that root, being very powerful, and us, you know, being mindful that, you know, these people that we admire are from these places that we ignore now. And so how many artists are we losing out on for not investing and supporting those communities?
And now we're taking away from even more.
That's right.
You know, stripping away our money from our children here in Baltimore City. As Carl Soak said in the show yesterday, you have a $150 million dollar show, what do you do? Give them the money.
I was listening in.
I know. What is that about? That is so strange. I'm like, put the money there. Like, what are you talking about?
Well, you know, I'll take it there. I think it's beyond strange. It's demonic.
Yeah, it is.
Doing the work, you know, as long as we've done the work collectively with so many other folk on the front line, and we think about how many children we've lost to violence, children who have not had equitable access to opportunity, and the trauma that lives in our communities as a result. Music is powerful. I mean, in Jamaica, during the times when the Wailers were producing music, you know, I think about Johnny Was, which was a song that was on Marley's.
Johnny Wells?
Johnny Was.
What? Johnny Was.
Which was a song on Marley's Rastaman Vibration album, which basically speaks to the story, or tells the story of a mother who lost her son. He was murdered. He was killed. And so, as artists, it's our responsibility to tell the stories of the Dawson family, you know, and so many other individuals who are no longer here, who have lost their lives, to keep them alive. And Marley's music does that and did that. It provided a ritual, and it keeps who we are alive. The best of who we must be, it challenges us. And it, you know, no holds bars. I mean, he put it out there. And early on, a lot of folk were extremely fearful of the Wailers of Bob Marley. Some of the reviews that he got were just incredible.
Negative reviews.
So, for instance, you know, Time Magazine listed Exodus, Marley's Exodus album, as the album of the century. In 1999.
Mm-hmm.
And so
I forgot about that.
And one of the things I always like to do is look at album reviews from back in the day.
Yeah.
You know, you have it drives Navasha crazy, but you know, you look at you know, Marvin,
it helps, though.
Marvin Gaye's, you know, What's Going On album.
Right.
And at the time, people are reviewing these albums, and you know, many times, you know, the response is, "What is this craziness? What they're just putting it out there? It's not organized structurally, musically, otherwise." Then a couple decades passed, and it becomes a masterpiece. So early on, the Rolling Stones actually reviewed Marley's album.
Rolling Stone magazine.
Stones. Thank you. Yeah, let me clarify. Stones magazine reviewed Marley's album. And, you know, in many ways, you know, they spoke about the album in such a way that it told it, they were very fearful, or this interviewer or this reviewer, Greil Marcus was his name. And so July 14, 1977, he went on to write that on the second side, the album falls apart. The mix of sex songs. On jamming, Marley sometimes sounds like a nightclub singer. In tunes about keeping faith simply do not sustain one's interest. Marley's performance never reaches out. It seems to collapse inward. So, you know, here we are in 2017 revisiting this review.
Yeah.
And in 99, this album was listed as, you know, the most influential, you know, album of the century. And so it really speaks to the courage that Marley had to be performing these songs, to be breaking boundaries while critics, individuals around him were saying, your music is terrible. Those messages, you know, about black liberation, we're beyond that. You know, we've evolved beyond that. And so that's just one of the many reasons why I respect Marley, to be creating music with folk all around him saying your music is not what it needs to be. Reggae music is a cheap music. You know, it's a two-tone music. Yet here we are talking about him in 2017.
It is a style of music that has grabbed the world. And I think that what he spoke to was a feeling of dispossession, a feeling of also hope.
That's right.
Of spiritual hope, of social and political hope, as well as talking about the conditions, as well as talking about love, whether it's sexual love or human love between human beings. He spoke to all that, and that spoke to generations, and it still does.
That's right.
They were frightened of it because of what it did do.
Exactly.
And it's still doing it.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
And I think that's, he was, and the way he did it, he was, now I didn't know him, never met him. But everybody, people I know knew him. When I talked to Kwame Kwayarma about him and others, he was humble and gentle. Never had this head like I'm a star. I'm not like I'm Bob Marley. He was just Bob Marley. Coming from Trenchtown.
That's
Right? Like coming from.
That's right.
Right? He was just a man from Trenchtown. Yeah, could be from the east side of Baltimore.
Come on.
Could have been from the west side of Baltimore.
There we go.
Just coming out.
That's right.
Right?
That's right.
I think that what helps maintain. Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, go. Let's go.
What maintains that is staying connected to the community. Because when you're in the industry, it's very interesting because you're a commodity, you're a product. And although Island Records and the companies he worked for made a lot of money off of him and still do, there was a certain level of staying connected because it's like when you do spiritual work, if you're singing about God and you're from a place where you need prayers still, that community needs prayers, or your family needs prayers, and you're praying with your family all the time, there's a certain kind of connectedness where your life is holistic, so you're actually living the work. So for him, I feel like as an artist myself, I can relate to the aspect of just staying connected to the community and the issues and know how serious they are. I mean, he was still trying to unite Africa forever. Like, that was a big mission for him. And so with him understanding the political climate and just what the injustice for our people, you know, he never lost sight of that, in my opinion. None of the Wailers did. I feel like they really understood the fight for that and stayed connected versus becoming a star. So it becomes message music, a ministry versus this entertaining thing.
You right. Know. It's something he felt and believed.
Yeah.
He was going to do it no matter what happened.
Yeah,
what
exactly. Happened.
Right?
The selflessness.
I mean, to me, this makes me, that subtext for me here as we talk is the trench town to sand town.
See, and that, there we go. And then on the flip side of that, still to this day, you know, you go to Sandtown, you talk about, you know, Cherry Hill Homes, you know, Perkins, Gilmore, and the sufferers are there. You know, as Peter Tosh used to say, you know, sufferers can add zero plus zero and get one. They're really holding this community together, you know, as individuals. When Marley was coming of age and Tosh was coming of age in Trenchtown, you know, the power of the sufferers to create change creates and strikes fear in so many folk. You know, Freddie Gray is known around the world now.
Yes, he is. That name is known around the world. And we were talking about this a little bit yesterday, again, with Carl Stokes. And one of the things we talked about was poverty and people calling and talking about it. And what I said to Carl was, and thinking about Bob Marley, where he came from, what Trenchtown is like, and thinking about what certain parts of East Baltimore, West Baltimore, Soundtown are like now, that I said, you know, when you grow up in poverty in the 50s and 60s, in segregated black poverty, when I was a kid hanging out with on the east side on Ashland Avenue with my dear friend Evan Johnson from the Boy Scout Troop at 567 at Faith Baptist Church on Ashland Avenue, poor, tough neighborhood. I said, Carl, the difference is you didn't live in it. Evan didn't live in a neighborhood. You didn't live in a neighborhood where the houses were abandoned, where people were abandoned, where people felt isolated and stuck.
That's right. That's right.
You know,
that's right.
Where you live next door to a house that is full of trees growing up through windows and rats climbing all around. You didn't live like that.
Well, you know,
people have to understand.
They have to understand it.
I want Annapolis to understand it. I want Capitol Hill to understand it.
That's right.
Lord have mercy.
Well, to your point, about 2 years ago, Navasha and I, through the Youth Resiliency Institute, we reached out to Niambi McIntosh, who happens to be Peter Tosh's daughter. And she's, you know, a manager of the Peter Tosh Estate. And we've been working in public housing for quite some time now. And so we see the connections, the parallels. So we reached out to Niambi McIntosh, and she responded. Now, we reach out to folk throughout Baltimore to come to public housing, you know, where we, you know, offer programming, services, so on and so forth. And we don't even get a response. We don't even get an email. We don't even get a hello after we reach out to them and they see us in a meeting. You know, they pretend like, hey, yeah, I don't know you. What's your name again? Yet we reach out to Niambi McIntosh from the Tosh Estate. And not only does she respond, but she comes to Baltimore.
Wow.
With her brother, Tosh One.
Wow.
Amazing artist within his own right. And it was so amazing because the families in public housing, they knew Tosh.
Sure
his
did.
Message was still relevant. And they were able to draw from who he was and what he has left in the same way, you know, folk are able to draw from Marley and Bunny Wheeler. But the idea is, you know, there's this opportunity now for us to really organize and unite specifically around issues that the sufferers are dealing with. You know, many folk still have an issue talking about poverty in the black community, specifically classism within the black community. You can talk about the middle class, but let's talk about what's going on in these communities where there is no working class because there's no work.
Say that again.
I know, that's important. I mean, yeah.
Right.
You might want to say that. That was a really nice quote.
That was a good line.
Well, but the idea is, you know, Marley, the message, providing oxygen for the sufferers to give voice. You know, we're so honored to be screening Alumni of Our Love at MICA.
Friday. Tell that story about
February.
We'll tell a bunch of times.
17th. And even more honored to have you serve as moderator of the panel discussion. You've been supportive of our work in public housing. Families have been in your studios over the years. So we're just so honored.
Well, it's my honor to be there. I can't wait.
But But I think about like a Shirley Folks, who's the focal point of this documentary, Love, who tells her story, who's being provided with the oxygen to tell her own story and other families in public housing to tell their own stories. It's not about Fanon Hill telling the story of Shirley Folks or Navasha Dea telling the story of Latifa Dorsey or Jackie Mayo. It's about them having the right and the platform to speak their truth for the benefit, the sake of Baltimore and the world. And so it's going to be an amazing event, but it's really going to capture the spirit of, you know, Marley in terms of celebrating who we are, who we must be. And musically, it's going to be.
Oh, yeah. I'm performing.
That was your cue.
I'm performing.
That was my band. So I'll be performing selections. So the documentary has an original motion picture. I mean, has an original soundtrack, and I'll be singing songs from the album live with my full band. So it's going to be a whole soul event and, you know, just expressing the different mediums of art and then with art and social justice. And it's interesting. I was thinking when you were talking, Fanon, that another aspect of Bob Marley is that, you know, when we do this work in public housing, one of the biggest parts of the film, as Fanon says, with his special edit being 33 minutes, because he's the director of the film, so we can have a conversation with members of the film and people from the community that the film is about, which is rare. Most filmmakers are about themselves and Look What I've Done. And Fanon made a good point to make sure it's about the families that we're serving and the community that is represented in the film. And then I'm thinking about and people getting a chance to hear the wisdom from that person, because the wisdom is sitting right there in those communities. And so I think about Bob Marley and Peter Tosh and Bunny and all of them, and just being from those communities. And actually, they are the voice of their community, yes, going out and speaking, yes, and right, singing, mm-hmm, about these issues. It's not someone who went and researched and got a grant and talking about it. These are actually people who actually are from that community, which I think is one of the aspects of the power that we feel. And they have to be good lyric writers, because everyone who can, right, sing is not, are not,
that's
good,
true,
writers. Unfortunately, people think, right, you know, differently. But it's still a skill. However, it's just really powerful. And then you can't speak about Bob without speaking about Rita Marley.
Right now.
And her being there for him and being patient with him and in regards to their personal life. And being a part of his life since the Wailers time. It wasn't just like I3, it was like early on. And her actually singing with the Wailers at a point when Bunny, you know, had to go away for a while. So it's just a very, you know, it's very important to understand that relationship. And when you do this work, if someone's doing powerful work, you want to look at their mate. You want to say, who's supporting them in this? Who's, you know, that pillow talk is real. A lot of advice comes at pillow talk during pillow talk. So who are, you know, you think about Malcolm and his wife, Martin and his wife, everybody and their wife, mm-hmm, and you have to, you know, honor her. So big ups to Rita in regards to the work that she's doing and the sacrifice she, you know, made in regards to just, you know, being his wife all those years and still singing with him despite everything, and birthing his children and supporting all of his children still. So I just want to acknowledge her.
No, no, it's important because, you know, I mean, as much as we all do love Bob Marley, mm-hmm, everybody is human.
That's right.
And nobody is a saint, mm-hmm, no pure.
Mm-hmm.
And clearly he was not. And misogyny is deep. Men think they can go off and do whatever they want to do,
mm-hmm,
and women are supposed to take it. I, mm-hmm, mean, that is mm-hmm, yeah, that's part of the legacy that we're trying to get rid of.
That's,
yes,
right, that,
please, right, get rid of that.
As men, yes, we have to get, mm-hmm, we have to deal with that,
mm-hmm,
and change our behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Not always easy,
mm-hmm,
but we have to struggle with that,
mm-hmm,
and change. Mm-hmm. So, folks, we'll take a short break and come right back. Look, we are live, so do join us here, 410-319-8888, with Navasha Dea and Fanon Hill talking about Bob Marley, his power of this world, his music constantly playing. We'll play some so you can really hear it as well. 410-319-8888. Want to hear ideas and thoughts? Tweet us at Mark Steiner. Do join us. We'll be right back.
We're jamming.
Bob Marley. So we're here with Fanon Hill and Navasha Dea, two of our favorite folks who co-founded the Youth Resiliency Institute, doing incredible work here in Baltimore and all around Cleveland and Baltimore especially. And we'll be talking about Lom Nova Love coming up this Friday night, next week at Micah.
Mm-hmm.
Before that, I want to remind you that conversations like this are brought to you in part by organizations like MeQ Baltimore's Credit Union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ Baltimore's Credit Union has been helping its members and communities prosper for the last 80 years. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. It's a credit union, not just a bank, belongs to you. Money comes back in the end. More information at www.mecu.com. Let's get a little bit of Steered Up and come right back to our conversation.
Oh,
play and
stop talking. Right. Hypnotic.
Lord have mercy.
Hypnotic.
It is hypnotic.
So many memories to those songs, too.
The harmonies, you know, the bass line, the guitar skank. I mean, it's just a beautiful, beautiful gumbo.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they are. I mean, it's just the way he just, that just, his flow is just, I literally mean, I can listen to him all day long. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, whether I, he's one of my favorite people to listen to as I cook.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Anything. Yeah, just anything.
Anything, right?
Yeah. All
right,
Val.
Well, you know, I mean, I am the cook.
Get the ingredients.
Oh, you are the cook?
I am a cook.
Oh, good to know. Well,
see, we have that in common because I do the majority of the cleaning in our household.
Yes, I'm the cook and he's the cook.
And Valerie does most of the other stuff. She does the laundry and stuff like that. I do the cooking. So,
oh,
you know, it all works out.
It balances out. You know what I'm saying? Balances out.
For sure.
So, I probably enjoy my cooking more than she enjoys the laundry, though.
Yeah, I imagine so.
So let's go to the phones. Is it Donald or Connell? Line one. Connell? Connell on line one, you're on the air. Welcome.
Yeah, good morning to you.
Good morning, good morning.
Yeah, I'm a Bob Marley fanatic also.
All right.
I'd like to cite a few words from an author called Kwame Dawes. He wrote a book called Lyrical Genius.
Yes, yes.
I think just pertinent to the conversation. He said, if Marley's ability to parlay his understanding of the world into song made doubters stop and wonder, they ought to know that Marley read newspapers, followed the news, listened to some of the most articulate scholars and historians in Jamaican society, and studied the words of Marcus Garvey, Malcolm X, Walter Rodney, Martin Luther King Jr., and Haile Selassie, while listening to all the black power music emanating from the United States and the United Kingdom.
That's beautiful.
Yes, yes, yes. He's a very gifted man, but, you know, he read also.
No, people don't realize that, you know. One of the things, the other person that he also read and liked was C.L.R. James.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right?
And Paul Coates keeps C.L.R. James in his stock.
West Indian Marxist yes, thinker that really influenced Marley, and Marley thought a great deal of his work.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, and, you know, definitely Marley.
Thank you, Connell. I really appreciate what you read to us. It means a lot.
You know, Marley understood the importance of diaspora in terms of, you know, the intersection between islanders, you know, folk, you know, living on the continent.
Yes.
Folk in black folk in Canada, so on and so forth. And he also understood that black folk all over, you know, specifically Africans and African Americans, you know, we have to know each other or needed to know each other beyond what how the media portrayed us in terms of who we are or should be in relation to each other. And so to the caller's point, absolutely. He was, you know, a voracious reader. Listen to the BBC, the Wheelers did, you know, between rehearsals, and they were aware of politics, but they weren't political, you know, and that's a true art to be aware of politics, but not to be political, not to be pulled in such a way where you're working as a mascot for this party or that party.
So he did jump into the Jamaican election a little bit, which is one of the reasons he was.
You better believe it.
He was shot.
Yeah. The powers to be did not like that too much.
Right.
You know, and that also speaks once again to his influence, you know.
Right.
When Marley, you know, the stories, you know, go when, you know, he'd be, you know, driving through Trench Town in his BMW, he'd leave the doors unlocked. You know, the people respected him and they loved him. And they, more so than anything else, they trusted him and respected him. And they knew that, you know, he was not going to sail out. And he didn't.
Never did. Mm-mm. Never would.
Mm-mm.
Not to his last breath. Let us go back to the phones and then hear a little more music here. 410-319-8888. Ayeezy, you're on the air. Welcome.
Peace and blessings to the WEA family, to the Steiner Show, and the man, Brother Mark, you keep slam dunking it with these phenomenal shows, man. I don't know how the radio station can withhold the amount of energy that is being expended, the power that's there.
Bring
it. Phenomenal. You know, you got the dynamic duo in the studio.
Yes, we do.
Following in the suit of Malcolm and Betty Shabazz.
I think
folks don't realize that even the image and the institution of the black family, that's revolutionary in this time.
Mm-hmm.
And for them to shine a powerful light in a dark time like this as a beautiful family that they are, man, it's tremendous. And the work that they're doing is extraordinary. I was blessed. My family came up to Baltimore for a Kwanzaa celebration. So, you know, we live and do much of our activities in the D.C. area. And D.C. has a whole, you know, they got a Kwanzaa booklet they put out of all different Kwanzaa events. And my mom actually went with us to a few different events. And she was like, the one in Baltimore, that was the most heartfelt one.
Aww.
It was family centered. And I mean,
that's when you all did, right?
Yeah, so again,
much respect,
phenomenal work that, you know, the Youth Resiliency Institute has been doing. And, you know, I look forward to trying to join them on next Friday for the event. And the Bob Marley piece I would lift up would be, you know, he said, you know, in these times of big trees, remember, we got small acts.
Small acts.
So y'all keep shining.
That's right. Love you, man.
Yeah, much respect. Much respect, brother Iezy and his beautiful wife, Rhonda, master educators.
Yes.
And, I mean, have done so much and contributed so much. It's a collective effort. Like them Willis with the beautiful harmonies back in the day, it takes all of us.
It, oh, my God, they do such amazing work.
I was thinking about during the uprising how Kwame Arma was producing his play, Marley.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which was an incredible production. I mean, you knew it was great when all the older people, I guess I'm one of them, I don't know, but all the older boys, I guess, were in the audience, mostly white, you know, older people who go to the center stage.
Right.
Marley was done. They were standing up and dancing and sharing along with everybody else. It was the power of that play was just so overwhelming. And then Kwame took the cast.
Mm-hmm.
To the middle of the uprising,
mm-hmm.
where they sang, performed, mm-hmm. and stood with the people in the community.
Mm-hmm.
That was a very powerful moment. As Bob would have wanted, from Trenchtown to Sandtown.
Yep, Trenchtown to Sandtown.
Right? Mm-hmm.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, Marley was such a philanthropist, you know, in terms of, you know, assisting folk financially, mm-hmm. and otherwise. And that's really not acknowledged as much as it probably needs to be acknowledged in terms of the role of the artist. I mean, you have this talent. How do you use this talent? How do you invest? How do you support, you know, economically, institutions in the community? And an institution is often and has to be understood as being quite possibly a family.
Yes.
An institution in our community. How can we support a family, you know? And Marley had an understanding of that in terms of his role and responsibility as a philanthropist.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because you have people like Fela, Anikilapo Kuti, Mary McCabe, Celia Cruz,
mm-hmm.
Who else? Gilberto Gil.
Yep.
Out of Brazil.
Yep.
And these are artists who really made it big, like way bigger than myself in regards to just being really popular. And they always stayed aware of what was going on. As a brother said earlier, he read the newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
He read books. He studied the greats who were speaking about issues. And I think in this place we call America, we have this freedom to ignore what's going on. We have the freedom as artists, specifically performing artists and musicians, you know, the Grammys are about to happen soon.
That's right.
We have the luxury of ignoring and not making songs about them. And those who do become exceptional. Or amazing, oh my God, you're so deep. And it's like in certain countries and in certain industries outside of the U.S., you don't have a choice. Because if you don't sing about it and talk about it, no one will know. And that's what Bob represents, Peter Tosh, all these elders. And that's what I try to follow in the footsteps of as an artist as well, because I can't ignore what's happening. I don't have the luxury of ignoring it. I have family that stuff. You know, I have, you know, I'm too connected. And so for people to be isolated, as Fanon talked about classism, to be isolated, I look at a lot of artists and see where they came from. A lot of people who come out of hip hop as hip hop artists and claim to be in a life went to private school. They don't know about the life. They don't know about anything. They don't know about food stamps and paying bills late and any of that. And you can't give what you don't have. So I really also appreciate, once again, Bob Marley always, this is a, you know, cry out or a calling out of my artists, or just asking to never lose sight of what's going on. And if we can't write songs about it, speak about it, because people don't know what's going on in America internationally. So if we can just write songs about it, sing about it, do plays about it, just really be about the truth. And then also make sure we're investing in these communities, because when we deal with money, people don't want to just be patted on the back like we acknowledge you. We want money. We want jobs. We want, as Fanon said, you know, working class, where there's no work, there's no working class. So we have communities that are not working class. There's no work. And people say that people are, you know, people who are not connected and are middle class and upper class blacks or people are not always connected to what's going on. I've been in meetings and talked to friends who are artists who have made comments about people stealing money from the government. They have a Mercedes and they're getting food stamps and public housing. And I'm like, no, you need to go there.
How many Mercedes you've seen in Sugar Hill?
Come on, none. Come on, man. And so that lets you know that people the sad part is that people who can help are disillusioned because they're not connected. They don't go there. One of the things that I'll feel that executive directors or boards or whatever of philanthropist organizations or nonprofits should do the work, should have a day they go into program and they actually work with the children so they can see what their staff go through, what they need supply-wise, and just really get a sense of it versus being in the tower or not, you know, or trying. But there's, I think a lot of people are trying, but to really go there, you get a more of a better sense of what's needed. And we have a real big disconnect with that.
Yes.
Those who have a responsibility to give in an informed way that's not safe all the time. And I really give thanks for those who put themselves out there to do that work.
Well, you know, and I'm glad you bring that up, Navasha, because Micah has an amazing new president, Sammy Hoy. He's been there for a while now.
I like him a lot.
Sammy Hoy, President Hoy actually visited Cherry Hill Homes and had a discussion with Shirley Folks, community organizer Shirley Folks. And when he left, Ms. Shirley looked at us and Navasha and I, and she had tears in her eyes because she shared that no one has ever visited, you know, this institution known as Cherry Hill. And when you think about a college president invested, taking the time to actually visit and say, what do you need? What have you been doing? What are your challenges? How can we partner? You know, it speaks greatly about, or rather demonstrates the opportunities that we have if we're willing to be courageous and cross boundaries, man-made boundaries. And so, you know, we're extremely happy and excited and honored to be, you know, screening Lumnava Love at MICA. And
yeah, it's very cool that's happening.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not surprised you're doing it either. It's really good.
Oh, yeah.
So it's a week from this Friday.
It's a week from this Friday. And then the 26th of February, we actually, Mama Shirley, Navasha, and I are going to be in Boulder, Colorado.
Really?
Where we're going to be screening Lumnava Love at the Nomad Theater. So folk are from throughout the nation very interested in hearing the stories, the successes, the challenges that families in public housing residing in Baltimore. You know,
and that is part of the future. I mean, one of the connections Bob Marley makes throughout the world is his message in the songs and how it's sung and the rhythm that goes with it and how it moves everybody. And the when you talk about Lumnava Love and the film going around the country, that's what has to happen and what is happening that we need to talk more about, which is these connections between our cities.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Correct.
Between people in cities around America and people in cities around the world.
That's right.
Which is where the future is going to hold.
That's right.
Right?
That's right.
Yes, because we can't trust media. We have to talk face-to-face.
Have to talk face-to-face. And as my friend Ben Barber, NYU, says in his work around cities, he said the struggle is not East Coast, West Coast versus the middle.
Mm-hmm.
It's about the urban world and everybody else, and a world that praises diversity, that loves the arts, that wants to build something more positive, and that's where the energy is going to come
from. That's right. That's right. Well, that's why even within the documentary Lumnava Love, we knew that we needed a soundtrack that reflected the realities that the families were experiencing in Baltimore, and the response has just been amazing. We're extremely humbled by the response that we've received. And I'm speaking about internationally, you know, the music being played in Jamaica and in throughout Europe, South America, but, you know, Japan. But it really speaks to, as you were sharing, Mark, you know, the power of the arts in terms of crossing boundaries and igniting important conversation. And that's what Marley's music did and continues to do.
Folks, do join us. We have, in our time left here, 10 minutes or so. We want you to come in at 410-319-8888. We know you're listening and enjoying, but we want to hear your thoughts as well. 410-319-8888. Tweet us at Mark Steiner. We read those tweets every day that come out here. You can log on to Facebook pages. I'll check. A lot of people have been commenting on both of the Facebook pages in terms of what I read earlier in the show today and posted as a blog. Looking forward to your thoughts there as well. But do join us at 410-319-8888. And to me, it was just thinking again about what I said earlier about silencing Elizabeth Warren. And it all fits in. This is all connected to me, right?
You better believe it.
It's all connected. I mean, and the only time you saw stuff like that happen in the U.S. Senate was when it had to do with race, and on top of that, a woman saying it as well.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that, and we have to stand up to that.
There's a there's an overall silencing of the experience of the African people that were brought here against our will, and also the Native Americans. I mean, in the work that I'm doing, I was just came back from Rutgers University. I was on at a meeting I was invited to that dealt with feminism, and it was for women of color, and it was the Center for Women's Global Leadership, Feminist Alliance for Rights, the U.S. meeting. And so we're representing the U.S., and we're going to meet with Canada, then we're going to meet with South, they call it, you know, the Southern, you know, South America. But it's dealing with the Americas, but one of the things that comes up in those settings, this wasn't even an equity setting, it was women of color, is the experience of the African Americans here, and that being ignored globally. And when you deal with Teheros, and you deal with, not Teheros, you deal with the slums in all the communities, as the word, you know, quotation slums, the disconnect with understanding those people in those countries, understanding the Africans in Sudan, understanding the Africans in Pakistan. I learned so much when I was there about the black people in every country and the different, the Indian ocean slavery, slave trade with the Arabs that we don't talk about, but that's another show. And then the Europeans, you know, for the Atlantic. And so slave trade and just that ignoring of that happening and it building. And then also the economics of taking 150 million people out of a country. That takes away the money from the country. You're taking the strong people from there. And so that's making the country vulnerable, which is now being raped even more. And Chinese people are coming in. So when you are a person as a global citizen and you're aware of culture, your own culture and other cultures, there needs to be a conversation of the impoverished in every country. And it can't be ignored. So when you talked about the invisible, African Americans, although we have made it in a sense of it seems like it, but as far as politics and policy and racism just on a regular daily level with police. I mean, after Sandra Bland was murdered, I have still been afraid of police officers. Mm-hmm. When I get pulled over, I feel afraid. And I'm looking about where I'm at. I'm putting my phone on. I'm putting my maps on. Make sure my GPS is on. Because of that moment and because of the neglect of these persecution, I feel nervous about that because we still don't have equal rights and justice here. We still don't have that. Only a select few. But the majority of people are in prisons. African Americans, they say there's more of us in prisons than were enslaved in the 1800s. That's devastating. That's crazy.
That's crazy.
And if we don't deal with this, it's genocide. We're still dealing with genocide. And the genocide of our people has not been dealt with internationally or stateside. So until that's, you know, dealt with, we're just going to deal with the situation we're dealing with now in our government. It's just, it's never been dealt with. And then now it's going further to the, it's going further out. It's getting worse.
You do feel it. I mean, this is kind of different forces coming together. You look at the work you're doing in Cherry Hill and East Cleveland, and the forces of positivity, the forces of love and change are like head on with the devastation.
Very much so.
That is trying to cripple folks at the same time. You know, this is not an easy struggle y'all are in. Mm-mm. In the work you're doing.
Yeah, and you know, Bunny Wheeler, you know, has a song in... Once again, Bunny Wheeler was a member of the Wheelers with Bob Marley and Peter Tosh. But he speaks about the dragon, conquer the dragon.
Yeah.
You know, you feeling good, you comfortable, we've arrived, but the dragon's waiting for us to get comfortable. And the dragon always strikes. And the dragon is very, very patient. And
oh,
so,
God, yes.
You know, Marley, Tosh, Bunny Wheeler, you know, they understood that, they understand that. But it's important for us in terms of legacy. Protecting the legacy of Marley, because I think that's very important as well. You know, they say that Marley's estate, estimated net worth is around $130 million.
Wow.
And so the question becomes, who's benefiting from those monies? Where are those monies going? You know, where are the Bob Marley hospitals in Jamaica? You know, the Bob Marley T-shirts you see, you know, here and there and everywhere.
And the juices.
You know, the juices, the marijuana strain that's coming out soon. Marley marijuana strain. You know, who's benefiting?
That's a Marley marijuana strain coming out soon.
Benefiting, you know, from right. From the legacy of Marley, and how are those monies, or are those monies being reinvested in a way that Marley would have wanted them to be reinvested?
So let me ask you a question as we wind down here. What do you think we should go out with? See if they can find it and pull it up. We'll throw it out there to them. What should we go out with?
Exodus.
Exodus. You got that right, bro? All right.
I'm for it.
So before we go out of here, we'll do a little Exodus because I think that's a perfect piece to go. We got 6 minutes or 7 minutes left. We can wait a second, then we'll start Exodus in a couple minutes and get it out there, and we'll just play it for folks as we go out of here. Well, let's go to another last caller here, 410-319-8888. William, you're on the air.
Hey, good morning.
Morning, William.
Hi, congratulations. You have a very, very excellent program, Mom.
Thank you.
Kind of, I don't know how early it is, but it kind of reminds me of what we did back in the day. We being Bob Cheeks, Dr. Napata.
All right, yep.
Protesting against the Inner Harbor when it opened up and funds were stolen from UDAC grant money, federal money for the public housing. Mm-hmm. And I was just wondering, would you give your email address, because I am trying to do some positive things like I did back in the day. I'm 67, but it's never too old.
That's right.
Yeah,
know. That's right.
Well, let me, I'll give you my email address is Mark, M-A-R-C, at steinershow.org. That's M-A-R-C at Steiner, S-T-E-I-N-E-R, show.org. Mark at steinershow.org. You write?
Okay.
You write, I'll write you back.
Okay, thank you. God bless you.
You too, man. You too. And I remember, yes, I mean, when Inner Harbor came out and we, back in 1983, when we were, after it was built, and we were running Billy Murphy's campaign for mayor, which we didn't win, obviously, mm-hmm. against William mm-hmm. Donald Schaefer, but we coined the slogan, the Outer Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. What about the Outer
mm-hmm.
Harbor?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, and we've been neglecting it still.
Mm-hmm. Still.
You know, we put money into Port Covington and Charles Street and wherever else,
mm-hmm.
and the folks saying, can't we rebuild Pennsylvania Avenue? Mm-hmm. Make that come back mm-hmm. and become part of a community. Mm-hmm. And as somebody said to me the other day, we were driving and said, you imagine if they had taken the Social Security Administration and instead of putting it out in the county, if they had put it
exactly.
at the corner of Pennsylvania North, what
yes.
would it have done for that neighborhood
exactly.
to put
that's
that
right.
place
that's
of work
right. that's right.
in the
but
middle?
But that's strategic,
right?
though. That's on purpose. People
right.
like to bleed out things.
Right.
The educational system, the communities, they're being bled out for the benefit of the new style of colonialism called gentrification, for the benefit of people still going to have some kind of comfortable space for themselves.
Right, exactly.
There's no humanity
we
in
could,
that.
It could be changed. So I want to thank you all. It's always wonderful to have you all in the studio. We're going to go out with, as we said, Exodus.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
A week from Friday, what time on? At
7 p.m. at Micah. You have the...
Mm-hmm, at 5E Hall.
Brown Center.
Yep, Brown Center. Definitely come on out. That's 1301 West Mount Royal Avenue. This is being hosted by Micah, specifically the President's Task Force on Diversity, Equity, Inclusion, and Globalization.
Yes.
Family, everyone out there, public housing is going to be in the house at Micah,
yeah.
sharing
yeah.
their stories.
Yeah.
There's going to be
That's
music,
it.
The Live family music. Engagement superheroes. We have superhero characters who have been created. You know, they focused on their inner strengths, and they're going to share their superhero characters, debut them publicly at this event. It's going to be a celebration of who we are and who we must be, and we're going to have a good time.
And it's free and open to everyone.
Brother Papa Wabe just texted me saying, sounding good, brother. You have great
Wabe.
Guests on. God bless always.
Hey.
Wabe.
He couldn't make it today, but I'm glad he could hear what you're doing.
Yeah, much respect, Papa
Thank
Wabe.
Thank you so much for having us.
And on our way out, I'll remind you, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by the Maryland State Education Association. From limiting over-testing to protecting our public school funding, you can learn more about issues affecting Maryland students, parents, and schools by visiting the Maryland State Education Association website at MarylandEducators.org. That's MarylandEducators.org. Navasha Dea,
yes.
Lanon Hill, love you both. Thank you
love
both
you
for
too.
Joining
Thank
us.
Thank you so much for having us.
Always.
Exodus. We'll be back. Stay with us. Through the roads of creation.